Good evening. I'd like to call the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Today's April 3rd, 2024. Let the record reflect at 6:03 p.m. Today we have a full complement of committee members present. Speaker Tilton is here, Representative McKay, Representative McCabe, Representative Allard, Representative Groh, Representative Gray, and myself, Chair Carpenter. We also have Senator Myers in the room. Thank you, sir, for joining us. Please silence your cell phones. Staff assisting us today with Mr. Cale Brown and Mr. Zach Lawhorn with the LIO and House records, respectively, and my staff, Emily Durfee, will be helping as well. This evening, we're going to take up the original version of House Bill 109, reduce corporate net income tax rate, and set an amendment deadline. And then we will adopt a new CS for House Bill 277, licensing reciprocity and fees, and hear that bill for the first time. So last year we had House Bill 109 before us, and we created a CS that combined this bill with House Bill 142. Today I would like to have a motion to bring us back to the original bill. My intentions are to have this bill and House Bill 142 go as separate pieces of legislation from here on out. Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to adopt House Bill 109, the original bill, reduce corporate net income tax rate, work draft 33-LS0376/alpha as our working document.
And hearing no objection, we will have the original bill before us. And I will set House Bill 109 aside and set a amendment deadline for it here later in the meeting. Okay, next on the agenda is House Bill 277. When the original bill was drafted last year, we were up against a deadline then, and we got just the basics of the bill in draft and needed to revise it. So we have never heard House Bill 277. We now have a committee substitute that has got the revisions in it, and I would like to adopt the committee substitute as the working document and the document that we will hear for the first time in this committee. Representative McCabe, do I have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to adopt the committee substitute for House Bill number 277, work draft 33-LS0905/Bravo as our working document.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the substitute for House Bill 277 is before us. Okay, I would like to invite my staff to come forward and help us with introducing the bill, cover some of the sectional analysis, and then we'll do some questions. Okay, for the record, will you please put yourself on the record?
For the record, Donna Ardwin, staff to Representative Carpenter.
Okay, I've got a few opening comments here on the House Bill 277, and then we'll move on with the introduction. So House Bill 277 requires occupational licenses to cost no more in Alaska than other states and allows for universal licensing reciprocities with other states. Current law requires licenses to cost no more than the cost to the government of approving such licenses. The Institute for Justice identified 64 lower income occupational licenses required by the state of Alaska. The cost of these licenses is higher in Alaska for 42 out of the 64 occupations than other states. The Institute for Justice also identified 32 occupational licenses in Alaska that have no licensing requirements in at least 20 other states. House Bill 277 eliminates licensing but not regulatory requirements in Alaska for these professions. I think it would benefit Alaska to recognize out-of-state licenses when the license holders are in good standing or join interstate licensing compact agreements, such as the Nurse Licensure Compact. We could also find ways to cut back on the number of barriers and licenses required to work in Alaska. We know, and we've discussed this in other committees and other venues, that Alaska needs workers. Yet the state is keeping individuals from working through some burdensome licensing requirements. So I think Alaska can thrive economically, but we've got to make it so. With strong families and self-sufficient individuals, it's going to be up to us. So I think it's time to make that happen. Ms. Ardoin, can you please introduce the bill?
The bill is very dense with a lot of conforming language in it. So for your sake and the sake of time, I'm not going to read every section of the sectional analysis, just those that have substantive changes. So we'll start with Section 2. Section 2 amends the centralized licensing statute, that's AS0801, to limit total fees collected by the state for occupational licenses to the national average fees for that each occupation. Currently, the state is limited to setting fees at the amount of money that it costs to issue a license, regardless of what they're spending in the agencies or the boards. This would say we're going to limit it to whatever other states are requiring for those fees. Section 2 adds a new section to the centralized licensing statute to require departments and appropriate boards to issue licenses to an applicant for a license which the applicant holds a comparable license in another jurisdiction. The applicant must hold a current license in another state, district, or territory of the United States and has actively used the license during the past 2 years. Fingerprint and criminal history checks and waiver of confidentiality will be required if required for a license in Alaska. Applicants must be in good standing in their existing license issuing jurisdiction. There are a few exceptions to this universal reciprocity. Those are for those licenses that have federal requirements. Moving down to Section 9. Section 9 amends the construction contractors to exempt from licensing requirements altogether the requirements for contractors who only perform work related to carpentry, cabinet making, cement finishing, door repair, drywall installation, floor sanding, glazing, insulation, iron and steel, masonry, painting, paving, pipelining, sheet metal, or terrazzo. The licensing requirements are being removed for these professions, but all of the regulatory requirements remain, including any kind of certifications or continuing education. Down to Section 13, amends the license required statute to remove collection agencies from required licensure. All the way down to Section 29, amends optometrist. It's dispensing optometrist statute to remove the reference to licensing for dispensing opticians. Down to Section 38, amends license tags and subsistence permits statute to remove reference to licensure for taxidermy and control of nuisance wild birds and nuisance wild mammals. Down to Section 52, provides for a transition on or after July 1, 2025. A person who holds a valid license certificate, registration, or endorsement by reciprocity, comity, credentials may continue to practice under the license permit, registration, or endorsement until it expires normally or is suspended or revoked. And Section 53 provides for an effective date of July 1, 2025. The rest of the bill is conforming language. The universal reciprocity requirement in this bill and the fee limitations in this bill had to be removed from statutes where they would be duplicating it all over the statute. We also have a presentation, Mr. Chair. Oops.
Yes, we'll go through the presentation, and then we do have Mr. Conrad Gunther, who's with Legislative Legal, who actually drafted the legislation. And Sylvan Robb is online. And once we get done with the presentation, we'll open it up for questions. And these individuals will help us with answering some of the questions that we have.
Hey.
Brief at ease. IT taken care of here.
All right.
All right, please proceed.
Donna Ardwin for the record, House Bill 277. The Mercatus Center in 2021 said, while regulations and licensures are usually justified as a means of keeping consumers safe, mountains of regulations can easily get out of control, become counterproductive, contradict each other, and harm the economy. According to the Alaska Policy Forum, Alaska is ranked 24th in the nation for the most burdensome state-level occupational licensing regulation. Overregulating occupations often disincentivizes or prevents people from pursuing an occupation they may be passionate about and excel at, further robbing Alaska of goods, services, and a flourishing economy that could have been enjoyed. Reducing state-level occupational licensure may also be among Alaska's easiest fixes for the issue of overregulation, since federal regulations are much harder for the state to influence. Policy Forum also says that Alaska's private sector workforce is dwindling for a variety of reasons, and it'll take a multi-pronged approach to encourage workers to rejoin the labor force in the state. One thing stopping some workers from transitioning to a different career is undue occupational licensing burdens. While rigorous processes to obtain licenses for some careers, such as doctors and surgeons, make sense, there are plenty of jobs, in particular lower middle-income jobs, that should not have such rigorous licensing requirements in the Policy Forum's opinion. They said it would also benefit Alaska to recognize out-of-state licenses when the holders are in good standing or join interstate compacts. It could also find ways to cut back on the number of various licenses required in Alaska. Alaska needs workers, yet the state is keeping individuals from working through burdensome licensing requirements. Alaska can be a thriving state with strong families and self-sufficient individuals. It's time to make that happen. According to the Institute for Justice, studied occupational licensing review in 15 states from 1985 to 2017. And found that occupational and professional licensing associations initiated at least 83% of the new licenses. The Institute for Justice concluded then that licensing policy is typically driven from special interests and not the public interest. Overwhelmingly, demands came from motivated parties who may put professional status or personal economic gain ahead of sound policy. In fact, independent government reviews most often conclude that these demands are not in the right direction. The Institute for Justice then went on to recommend that government review licensing proposals using such criteria as whether or not there's proof of harm from an occupation, whether the benefits of licensing could outweigh the costs, and whether the public safety would be better protected in a more less burdensome or more restrictive way. Instead of adopting an entire review for this bill proposal, because this committee also has House Bill 190, the Alaska Sunset Commission Act, which passed out of Ways and Means, and is currently in the State Affairs Committee. If that act becomes law, occupational licensing review will be part of the commission's purview. So instead, we did what we thought would fast-track the economic benefits of such review in House Bill 277 by immediately allowing universal reciprocity for licenses granted by other states, and to remove some of the cost burden for licensees and prospective licenses.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Ardwin. I appreciate the introduction. And now we'll open it up for questions. Do we have any questions of committee members tonight? Representative Groh.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. I have not seen a fiscal note on this. Maybe you could lay out the plan for it. I welcome whatever we can do to help improve our economy. I obviously think it's useful to know. I assume there is going to be some net negative fiscal impact of the state. Useful to know what it was. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let me ask Ms. Robb from Division of Corporation Business Professional Licensing about fiscal note. Have you guys worked on a fiscal note at all for this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Sylvan Robb, Corporation's Business and Professional Licensing at the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. There is a fiscal note posted, Mr. Chair, through the chair to Representative Groh, for the original version of the bill. Because the CS has not been adopted, we do not have a fiscal note for the CS yet. That original fiscal note, Representative Groh, was indeterminate. We did have a meeting with the chair and got a better understanding of what the bill might entail, which will allow us to put some numbers together related to the actual costs related to this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Robb, and we will make sure that that fiscal note gets uploaded to the BASIS computer system for the public and for committee's sake. You'll all get a copy of it. Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a little bit of a series of questions, if that's all right. My first question is, in the state of Alaska, how many licensures do we have currently? And then in this piece of legislation, how many would we be removing? I think that'd be important to know, because I think that we have a overburdensome amount of licensures. And then also, most likely for Ms. Robb, but there was a time period when there was a backlog in getting your licenses renewed, and if those backlogs have been updated and are up to date on all of the licensures. And my last question, there are some licensees that have increased to very high dollar amounts to cover costs of investigations for those particular occupations. And are any of those included in this bill? And maybe just, I don't know if there's a number of those that are there, and if any of those are included in this legislation.
Thank you, Speaker Tilton. And I think we'll go to Ms. Robb for an answer on how many licenses are currently with the state of Alaska.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Tilton. Madam Speaker, we only license those professions that we're required to do so in statute. The Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing licenses 125 different professions. We do not encompass all of the licenses that are covered by this bill. So there's licensing in other places. Law enforcement is covered by the Police Standards Council. Teacher certification is handled by the Department of Education and Early Development. Electricians and plumbers are handled through the Department of Labor. EMS technicians are done by the Department of Health. So there are a few that I was not even aware of that Ms. Ardwin mentioned, such as requirements to be licensed for taxidermy or pest control. So I can speak to what CPL covers, but as to the others, I don't have those figures off the top of my head, and out to the other departments for those numbers.
So in this, at this point, I want to pause for just a second. Ms. Robb, could you help us with the understanding of the difference between a professional licensing, professional license, and an occupational license?
Mr. Chair, a lot of people use the terminology somewhat interchangeably. At times in the past, the division has had the words occupational licensing in the title. I think some people might consider occupational licensing to perhaps be more inclusive, to include some of the trades and other professions that people may not think of when they think of professional licensing, but we tend to use them interchangeably.
Okay, thank you. And to address Speaker Tilton's second question was how many licensures would be removed with this bill. Have you had a chance to review the CS and make an assessment on that?
Mr. Chair, we have been going through the CS. We're still evaluating it. It's very complicated. And again, even if I had a figure, I would only be speaking to those impacted for our division. And then there are a couple things that are a little bit in a gray area. For example, collection agencies would no longer be required to be licensed, but they would still need to submit all of the paperwork that currently comes with that. And so it would be a policy call if you wanted to that or not in that figure. But we'd be happy to go through and get that figure for the committee.
Can you reiterate your third question?
Sure.
I didn't write it down fast enough as you were talking.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know I went through a little bit of a series there, and I don't mean to hog all the time. Just inquiring minds want to know, right? I think that the next question that I had asked is there was a period of time where there was quite a backlog in renewal of licensures, and just wondering if those backlogs have been brought up to date, or are we still experiencing backlogs in licensures?
Thank you. Through the chair, Speaker Tilton, we are doing much, much better. I assume probably a lot of the backlog that you are familiar with and referring to was related to licenses issued by the Division of Corporation Business and Professional Licensing. At the height of the pandemic, our professional licensing team at points had 35% vacancy, and that greatly impacted our ability to process licenses in a timely fashion. We're in a much, much better place with our vacancy rate. And additionally, the governor proposed in last year's budget, and the legislature graciously agreed to grant us 12 additional positions. And so with previously vacant positions as well as those new positions getting hired for, processing times have greatly improved.
Ms. Robb, the processing times have improved. Does that mean we still have a backlog?
Mr. Chair, it's a little bit hard to answer because licenses can take some time to process, and sometimes the delay is not with the division. So we can't issue someone a license, obviously, until they have met the requirements in law to obtain that license. And sometimes that requires documentation that can't be sent to us by the applicant. So, for example, verification of licensure from other jurisdictions, we require that come to the division directly from the other jurisdiction in this age of document manipulation. The same thing for transcripts to verify education. Some professions require employment experience, and again, that's beyond the applicant's control how quickly people get around to forwarding those documents to the division. Additionally, we have 45 different professional licensing programs, and so just to help the committee understand, so a program would be dental. Within dental, we obviously license dentists, dental hygienists, and then dental assistants while an unlicensed profession do require a certificate to perform certain functions. So that would be one of the 45 programs, which is how you get from 45 programs to 125 professions. And each of those professions has different requirements, obviously. And so there can be different processing times as well as different things that cause the process to be slower.
And I'd have just one real quick follow-up on the concept of the length of time necessary to issue a license. And I know that we're talking 125 different professions here, but how many of those current licenses do the person submitting for a license, are they able to work in that profession until the licensure is adjudicated, if you will, or granted, and then maybe just a ballpark percentage is good enough for this, because I know that's it's a lot of numbers there.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chair, for understanding about some of the limitations on being able to just give you a straight answer. So The majority of the professions that require a license or registration with the state, you may not do that until you have that license. That being said, many of our professions, and I think Ms. Ardwin alluded to, you know, that adding some length to this bill, do offer an option to obtain a temporary license. So nursing is a great example. Nurses represent 32,000 of the 110,000 professional licensees we have. As nurses are on their way to a permanent license, once they have sent us a subset of the requirements, we issue them a temporary license, at which point they may get to work. And a number of professions have a similar sort of temporary license on the way to permanent licensure once we obtain a subset of the required documentation. I don't know if that answers your question, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, it comes close. When you say a number have temporary licenses, is that number somewhere close to 50% or less than 50%?
We tend to have temporary license options, Mr. Chair, for those professions where the amount of time required to obtain a license is longer. For a number of professions, the processing time to obtain a license is not terribly long, and the amount of documentation required is not great, and so we can get that person a permanent license. It may actually end up slowing down processing if we try to stop and issue people temporary licenses on the way to those permanent licenses. But when you're thinking of professions that require naturally more documentation, like, you know, physicians, pharmacies, pharmacists, some nurses, a lot of people who have prescribing rights, those are the ones where we tend to have temporary licenses on the way to permanent licensure.
Thank you. Speaker Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, I believe this will be for Ms. Robb. The last question I had asked was about some of the costs or the licensures have become really high in some professions due to the cost of investigations, which have to be covered according to our statutes. Are any of those professions included in this bill? I know you haven't had this very long, so do you have an estimated number of professions who had come in with extremely high license costs?
Through the chair, to Speaker Tilton, we can get you that figure. I guess what counts as a high licensing fee is probably relative to what some other states are charging. As you noted, many times when we do see much higher licensing fees, that can be related to investigations, as you noted, statutorily also required to be covered by licensing fees. The governor has introduced a bill to address this, to allow us to use some of our corporate registration fees to cover the cost of investigations. And because investigations are the most volatile element in our fee setting equation, transferring the fund source that is paying for investigations would go a long way to both reducing licensing fees, especially for professions that see a number of investigations, as well as adding a lot of stability to licensing fees.
A follow-up?
I'd be happy to provide the committee with the number of those professions that are included in this bill. And I apologize for speaking over you, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up. Thank you, Ms. Robb. I appreciate that. If I don't have a follow-up on this because you're going to provide the information, I do have another question, but I'll move on and let other members ask questions first.
I'll come back to you, Representative Allard, and then Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Robb, I have a couple of questions in reference to, I believe it's called the Military Compact for Licensures, and I wanted to see if you had information. We'll go ahead and use the nurses, for example. There was a big, long waiting list, and military spouses could not, I think, couldn't get their nurse's license. Could you tell me if there's still a waiting list, and if there is a waiting list, why, and how long is it to clear those individuals off that waiting list? Military spouses are supposed to be priority. So if there's a waiting list and others are being processed, and that's a problem for me.
Through the chair, the Representative Allard, there were quite a few things in there. So in the previous legislature, a bill was passed that created temporary military licenses for nearly all of our professions. There were a couple exceptions for those professions that require Alaska-specific knowledge, big game guides as well as marine pilots. And that was instituted across the professions to allow military members to obtain licensure. They were, as soon as we had a completed application, we were required to issue them a license in no more than 30 days. I think what you may be thinking of, Representative, is in January of 2023, the federal government passed a law related to licensure portability for military as well as military spouses. The language that would get state statute to conform with that federal statute is contained in the governor's universal temporary licensure bill, HB 85, which has yet to pass the full legislature. In the meantime, we do have on our website the opportunity for military individuals as well as military spouses to reach out to the division directly, and they do get expedited processing. We submit a report to the legislature each year since that bill passed in the previous legislature. In the first year, we had 19 people who took advantage of that provision. We have been working to increase the awareness of that. And again, military and military spouses are able to obtain licensing. They don't have to get in the regular line.
Follow-up, Representative Allard?
Yes, so thank you. No, I was actually talking about the one that did pass. So can you tell me if there is a waiting list for any military spouses waiting to be licensed in any of the fields?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, I can, and there are no military or military spouses who are waiting. As I say, as soon as we get a complete application, we get them their permanent license. I mean, we do have to wait to obtain the documentation that we're required to have, but as soon as we have that, their licenses are issued.
Let me do this quick ballot.
Representative Allard.
Okay, how many? Okay, so you're saying right now, currently, of the military requests for licensing, we're waiting on them to get the rest of the documentation, and you're saying that there is no waiting list currently for anybody on hold for a license on your side, meaning that it's we're waiting on you guys, and that when they do it, you say you get it to them less than 30 days?
Through the chair to Representative Allard, that is correct. And just currently we don't have anyone who's either a military member or a military spouse who's waiting for a license period, regardless of the reason for that.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Chairman. Through the chair, Ms. Robb, I'm interested to know how is this enforced? So does somebody go on a job site and say, hi, I'm from your division and I'd like to see your license? Or and, you know, we talked a little bit about investigations. I assume that's investigations if there's an issue with the license holder doing the work that they're performing under their license. That creates an investigation. So I'm wondering how many people you have investigating and who actually enforces this. Who goes on a job site and said, hi, I'd like to see your plumber's license. And if you don't have a license, do they cart you off in handcuffs, or is it a ticket or a misdemeanor, or what? What's the whole enforcement procedure?
Through the chair to Representative McCabe. So in your example of a plumber, the Department of Commerce are not actually the ones who license that particular occupation. That's the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. We do partner with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. They visit job sites for construction contractors looking for people's licenses. But otherwise, our investigation unit does operate on a complaint-driven function. So people complain either about unlicensed practice for those professions that do require a license, or if they feel somebody has operated out of the scope of their practice or in a dangerous or harmful way, then we investigate those.
Follow up.
So thank you. And how many people do you have working in the investigation unit doing those investigations?
Through the Chair, Representative McCabe, we have 21 certified investigators, and then there are five additional staff. We have several paralegals because, obviously, as we're taking licensing action against folks, those are legal actions. So altogether, there are 26 people in our investigation unit.
Thank you.
21 of them are investigators.
Thanks.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was really interested in the presentation when she mentioned Section 13 and said that it amends the license-required statute to remove collection agencies from required licensure. I'll note that also Section 12 has to do with it, and actually all the way through Section 22 is dealing with removing everything related to licenses required for collection agencies. I have gone down a Google rabbit hole. I pulled up the application to become a collection agency operator in the state of Alaska. There's a $50 non-refundable application fee, a $50 licensing fee, and then you have to get fingerprinted, and that's a $75 fee. So $175 total. I just looked through the application. You have to have a certificate of moral character, meaning somebody has to attest that you're not someone who's going to use this position to get back at your enemies by collecting debts from them, etc. And you have to fill out the application saying that you've never been convicted of any crimes related to collecting and get that notarized. It doesn't, to me, seem like a overly burdensome application. It doesn't feel too expensive either. And so I'm just curious about why we would want to not license. And full disclosure, I had no idea that we license collection agencies. So that's why I started Googling. But when I looked at the application, I thought, well, I think these are probably reasonable questions to ask somebody whose full-time job is going to be calling people and saying that they owe a ton of money and trying to collect that money. So I was curious about if you could just talk about why it seems to be a large section of the bill and why this license in particular is one that we would want to get rid of.
Ms. Ardwin?
Through the chair, Representative Gray. First, with regard to the number of sections of law, there's one section of law that I referenced which removes the licensure requirement. That's why that's the one I read. It removes the licensure requirement, not all the other requirements that you mentioned. The others are just sections of law that refer to licensed collection agencies. And so now it no longer says licensed collection agencies. It just says professional collection agencies. This collection agencies was chosen because in the Institute for Justice database, it was one of the licenses that 20 or more states don't require an actual licensure for that profession.
I would like to take a stab at answering the question, and it's maybe along philosophical lines. Somebody that is hiring an individual to do the work, they likely would like to hire somebody of moral character. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't it be personal responsibility for that business owner to be asking those questions as well? And if they aren't, and there is a problem that comes from that, isn't the business owner going to be liable for their employee's work? So the question that I have philosophically is, of what value is it for the state to have asked the question that the business owner has a vested interest in asking themselves. Are we better protected because the state has asked the question?
Thank you. Through the chair to the chair. That's very interesting because I actually found out there's multiple applications even in Alaska. So in other words, the person who's going to be like the agent has their application. The agency itself has an application as well. So in other words, you as the employer must also assert your moral character in order to become the agency. So I think that was sort of, I found it interesting. I couldn't find it now because I was literally just pulling up Google stuff, but I thought it was 37 states that had the license. So, but I could have been wrong what I just saw, and it was Google that they said 20 states didn't have it. So I do recognize that there were at least 13 states that said they didn't have a license, but a lot of them, but in the particular article I was looking at, said that the municipalities within that state would have their own licensure for this type of collection agency. So I guess going off of that, would it be an intent that we would shift this responsibility perhaps to Anchorage or to the larger cities in Alaska if they wanted to ensure the moral character of their collection agencies? Or would that be something that would be a benefit to the state to move it to the municipal level?
Representative Gray, Representative Carpenter, I'm not entirely, this is the intention of the bill is not to shift the cost to a local municipality, but if the state no longer does function and the municipality chooses to do it themselves, then I guess that's on them to pay for it.
Thank you.
Representative Tilton and then Representative Aller.
Sure. On that line, we're talking here a little bit about licensures and we're talking about a state licensure. I don't know if anybody can answer this question, but if say somebody was starting a new business and they lived in the city limits of a certain city, they would have a city business license, they would have perhaps a borough business license, and then have a state business license on top of that. And I don't know if there's others. I guess my question I'm getting at is how many entities would a person have to have a business license with to be able to go into business? I don't know that there's actually an answer, and that might be a rhetorical question, but I think it is interesting.
Ms. Robb, I'm going to take a stab at having you answer the question. Are you familiar with how many municipalities have their own licensing requirements for a business?
Through the chair to Speaker Tilton, I don't know how many different municipalities require a business license, but for statute, if you are doing business in the state of Alaska, with a few exceptions, you do need a state of Alaska business license.
A follow-up on that. Thank you, Ms. Robb. I appreciate that. I wouldn't expect when you're doing the state business licensor to know, but I do know that as a local business person, with a business that's in the city of Wasilla, we do have a city of Wasilla tax or license, excuse me. and then there is a borough one that was added on top of that, although the Matsu borough recently rescinded their business license program. And then you would also have a state. So you have three licensures that you would need before you were able to conduct business, and that seems like we're starting to get a little excessive, not just in cost, but in timing as well.
Thank you, Representative Tilton. Representative Ballard? Nothing from Representative Ballard. Okay. Any other questions tonight?
Can I make a point? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just have a little comment, maybe.
You can make a comment, too.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I hear what Representative or Speaker Tilton is saying in regards to like kind of overdoing it. But I also understand kind of where Rep. Gray was coming from. And so where I'm coming from is that with this particular one, what concerns me is the kind of license or the kind of business it is that we wouldn't, are we wanting these? I was hearing what you're saying, but just to be clear, are we going to continue to require a license from the debt collectors?
Through the chair, Representative Allard and Gray and Tilton. So I'll just maybe repeat or reiterate that any of the licensing requirements that are being removed in this do not remove any of the underlying regulatory requirements, including those that you mentioned, fingerprinting, background checks, and so forth, certifications, and so forth. I did want to also make clear that this is about occupational licensing. This bill does not address business licenses, so business licenses are not exempt anywhere in this bill. There's a difference between I'm going to do business in the state or the city or the borough, and I have a specific occupation that requires a certification. I want to make a point to something that you said, Representative Carpenter, about as it's we picked out collection agencies, but if you look at the list of those that had 20 states or more that don't require licenses, that doesn't mean they don't require other certifications and so forth. They all tend to be subcontractors. You see a lot of the in the carpentry and in those trade type of professions on this list, and I think it gets to your point that there's somebody actually overseeing those professions. I think Ms. Robb talked about the categories and subcategories. So when you say numbers of licenses, sometimes they're subcontractors to other contractors. And finally, in my experience in other states, occupational licensing has been done at the state level. There haven't been city occupational licenses and municipality occupational licenses.
Thank you. And please let the record reflect at 6:45 p.m. we're joined by Representative Galvin. Thank you for joining us. And we'll go to Representative Gray and then Representative Tilton.
Thank you. Through the chair to Ms. Ardoin. If I understand what you're saying, that we're removing the licensing requirements, but not the certification requirements. But for example, so you would, I mean, I guess then you wouldn't pay the licensing fee because you don't need to be licensed. But how do we know that they're going to come on here and answer the questions saying that they haven't filed for bankruptcy, that they haven't been convicted of a crime related to running a collection agency, that they don't have any pending actions against them for crimes as running a collection agency? And then the next thing it says is get this notarized saying that you said that you didn't do that. I feel like if they're not submitting this license paper, then who's checking to make sure that they're not committing these crimes?
Representative Carpenter, through the chair, Representative Gray, I would actually like to go back to Ms. Robb. She was talking about how these are, how we find out and how the frauds may be detected or reported, because I think it would follow the same path.
Ms. Robb, could you help us understand how we identify bad actors, if you will?
Through the chair to Representative Gray and Mr. Chair, if an entity ceased to be licensed by the division, because people do reach out to us, for example, about plumbers, and we direct them to the appropriate entity, because we are funded through fees paid by licensees, for those entities that are not licensed professions that we govern, we would deem that complaint to be non-jurisdictional and would try to direct them to the appropriate place for that to be investigated. And so with collection agencies, since they would not be licensed by a different entity, were this bill to become law, I think we would probably direct people to consumer protection at the Department of Law, perhaps.
Representative Tilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Ardoin, for the clarification with the occupational licensing. That just adds one more license that you have to buy, because in most cases, if you have an occupational license, you are probably doing some kind of a business and or fall under somebody who has a business. So there is business licenses from all those entities still involved. So, but thank you for clarifying.
Representative Allard.
I thank you. And through the chair, Ms. Robb, I appreciate the clarification too. I just don't know if I agree with it.
Can you rephrase or clarify? Don't agree with what she said, or don't agree
I
with
don't
the provision
agree.
Of the bill?
I'm not really sure that. Right. I think I disagree with the removing of the license for the collection agencies. I feel it's risky. So if you're already being collected on by a collection agency, there's already issues going on, and to have it where the person could, or somebody else could just falsely, we don't know, call me and say, hey, you owe this. I'll be like, no, I don't. And they could say, yeah, if you don't pay it, we're going to put it on your credit. I'm like, oh, well, maybe I should do it. And they don't have a recourse because we don't know if it's licensed. We don't know who they are. And I feel that if we have somebody calling us or saying that, or anybody can do, there's a lot of scams. I don't need a 77-year-old woman who's a home alone, holding her finances, being scammed. And they could just say, hey, you owe us $300 and we'll call it a day. And if there's nowhere for this woman to go to, I use her as an example, then I'm not sure that that's a smart idea to remove it. I'm trying to find my words for it. I guess, no, I want it to stay in there. So okay. I'll figure out a way to do that.
Thank you, okay. Representative Auer. Representative McCabe.
So the same 77-year-old woman is going to stand at the door and say, you're a collection agency? Show me your license. I don't know that I agree with it either, but I agree that there has to be some procedure for vetting collection agencies, and then let the agency hire the people and vet the people themselves. But making sure that everybody in the agency itself is licensed, I don't know. You know, I mean, where does it end? I saw something about drywall people in there. Are we going to, I mean, we're licensing drywall people? You know, that's, I don't know.
Can I respond?
I got a story for you.
May I respond? Yeah, I'm.
Representative Allard.
Thank you. I can give you a story about drywall. And he is now up in Fairbanks and owes me a lot of money. But I will, I know, where does it end? My point where it ends is, no, they're not going to come to her door. But she could have the ability to say, what is your name and who are you with? Hang up and then say, hey, call the state and say, does this? And maybe it doesn't have to be 77. It could be a 25-year-old who's trying to learn their way through life. I don't know where it ends. But if you're saying, well, there might be another avenue to protect these people through a different thing, well, then there's a whole bunch of other money and there's another bill and there's a whole another conversation. Instead, we could just put them in here and call it a day.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I may be repeating what Representative McCabe said, but we'd have to believe that the licensure itself was going to protect against those activities. I think one of the issues that we're raising in this bill is what is the value of that license itself. And for example, to Representative Carpenter's point about the hirer wanting to have things like moral character, for example, you know, my son is a subcontractor and he has general contractors that require him to have a bond, for example, or have insurance, for example, in order to work. The state's not making him do that. The general contractor's doing that.
Dear Lord, you just changed my mind. Thank you, Ms. Arduin.
Representative McKay. Okay, we'd like to make these night meetings interesting, okay?
And late, obviously.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I do appreciate the opportunity, and I really appreciate that you put this bill forward, because I think there are some serious problems with some of our licensing. My first question is for staff. Section 25 and 26 of the sectional. I happen to be a registered professional engineer. I've dealt with the board that deals with architects, engineers, land surveyors, and I would like to meet with staff offline and explain 25 and 26 so I understand what that means with regard to comity and reciprocity. I don't want to guess. I think I know, but I don't want to board a committee. We'd go through that, but
I can do it quickly, and then we can do it offline.
Well, all right. we can also go to the drafter to help us understand what that means.
I can do it
for us, Miss Arden.
I want to.
And Conrad can correct me, please, if I'm wrong. Through the chair, as I mentioned in the beginning, there is a lot of language being removed in this bill. It's why it's so dense, because in this case, the universal reciprocity new portion of the statute in this bill would allow for universal reciprocity in all of these professions. Some of them have in their own section of statute reciprocity allowances or universal. Some of them use the terms comity or reciprocity by I think there's another term, I can't remember now, you had a minute ago, but there's several different terms for reciprocity, so comedy being one of them. So any place where those professions have section in their section of law that says that they have some kind of reciprocity, that's being eliminated out of those sections because there's a universal reciprocity section being added to Title VIII. And so a lot of these sections where you're seeing, they already have reciprocity of some type. Oh, a licensing by credential, that was the other one. So comedy, reciprocity. So all you're seeing there is it's just conforming to the fact that now there's a universal section in the law.
Okay, so what that means in practical sense is a registered petroleum engineer in Texas can move to Alaska and he can be ordained as a registered professional petroleum engineer in Alaska without having to do anything. That's reciprocity.
Through the chair, Representative McKay, it is. Then the engineer or whatever still has to follow all of the requirements for having and keeping that license once they get to Alaska.
Okay.
Even if the requirements are different than they were in the state of Texas.
That's right. Thank you.
And I might let you know that registering of professional engineers in other states is not nearly as difficult as Alaska. So we have professional engineers operating in Alaska that haven't been tested or credentialed or qualified to the level of the local guys. That's the reality because of reciprocity. So it kind of works both ways, right? Okay.
Because as you pointed out, that's already in the statute, the comedy.
Okay. So my second issue, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Representative McKay.
I know the evening is getting late, but I'm really delighted to see that we might be doing something in Section 51 of the sectional third paragraph. My favorite subject, barbering and hairdressers. Okay? And so I'm going to tell you a story. A close family member of mine was trained in Indonesia to do haircuts and hairstyling. Paid money to go to school, got a license, got everything. Moves to Alaska, paid $10,000 to go to trendsetter school for almost a year. Took the practical exam, got 100 on the practical. That's where you actually do a haircut on a live person. Did several different hairstyling exercises on live people. Got 100. Perfect. Get to the written exam, which is an outsourced exam given by a national organization. Took it 4 times. Studied like crazy. The book is 2 inches thick. Could not pass it. Cannot work. So it's not just the cost of the license. It's the cost of the education and the training that gets blown. I looked at the test. I looked at the book. You have to be in medical school. There's physiology questions, anatomy, biology, chemistry. It's very, very difficult test to pass to cut hair. I've asked the Department of Commerce, I think 2 or 3 times now, even up to the deputy commissioner, the commissioner level, and all I get is an email back with the typical bureaucratic gibberish that there's nothing we can do. Tough luck. So I guess I'm just using my opportunity here to point out that this is one area where we're really screwing up. We got to pass a law, I guess, to get things to change. And I'll bet you that there's a lot of other areas where we have the same situation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative McKay. Representative Gray.
Thank you.
Yes, I do feel a little
bit. So through the chair, I do have one of the licenses here. I mean, I have a medical license, and it was not a pleasant experience. And I definitely support removing unnecessary burden. I'm not suggesting that we get rid of license. I'm happy to get rid of licenses for drywall. But I will say, though, just for the record, I am concerned about this particular one issue because, like I said, it just seemed like a pretty straightforward application. And again, just not just for the person who's the agent, but for the agency itself. And I mean, I'll do more research. I don't know how many collections agencies we have in Alaska. I don't know how big of a deal this is, but I just feel, I don't know why I'm hung up on it, but I'm concerned about that one.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Gray. Let me remind the committee and the public that this is the first hearing of the bill. We're all discussing it for the first time. It goes through a process of making it better through this exact process. So I am thankful for all the participation and the questions and the varied experiences, because that will help us get to a better bill. I appreciate that, truly. Other questions for tonight? Okay. Seeing no questions, I am going to submit for the record here an amendment deadline for both House Bill 109 and House Bill 277 of April 8th at 5 p.m. That is next Monday. Any other questions or comments before we adjourn tonight? Representative Gray.
Through the chair, do we have this committee tomorrow night?
Are we scheduled for Ways and Means tomorrow night? Yes. Thank you.
Maybe that's a mistake.
Brief and easy, and I'll get you an answer. To cancel the Ways and Means meeting that was previously noticed for Thursday, you may have the night off, but I have an LBNA function that I have to attend. So, two competing meetings, so we will not. All right. Any seeing no other questions or comments, we will be adjourned as of 7:06 p.m. Thank you all.